Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, America elects a WWE Hall of Famer again. In a lazy river, NXT and ECW beats AEW and Invader Club. Vader versus Salman Hasimikov, I think is how you say the name, from New Japan 1989. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Chris, what's the good news this week, if any?
The good news this week. Oh boy. Jeez. The good news this week is I at least finally alleviated the problems that I was having with the bass player that I've been having. Found it. Nice. And Oliver just found his phone.
So
we have other exciting bits of good news here.
I had a bit originally where I was gonna do like a Shake Them Ropes Theater doing the Booker T School of Broadcasting, because I think I've firmly deconstructed his style, but I'm not sure of the bit, so I decided not to do it. And I realize I'm coming on air and I have nothing for the banter segment.
I feel like the bass player banter is a good banter, but it's a long banter. I don't know that we need a long banter today.
He's a bass player. I'm a bass player. What am I talking about?
This reminds me of a fun joke about drummers.
Okay.
One of those real quickly. You know what's neat about drummers?
What?
Oftentimes they have friends who are musicians.
That's a good one. I recommend the One Song podcast from last week. They're doing Steely Dan Peg. I'm a big Dan guy.
Oh, I've seen little cliplets of this. I enjoyed H. John Benjamin realizing in real time that Michael McDonald is the guy doing the vocals when he's like, This sounds like something Michael McDonald would do. It's like, he did.
Well, the thing is, like, if you're a hardcore Steely Dan guy, the whole thing, the whole documentary, like the one album Asia thing where they do the hour and they do the takes and they're on the board and stuff, far more interesting than H. John Benjamin doing bits about how he's not really a jazz musician, which
right
is...
that was my problem. Is I appreciate getting some of this content out to a broader audience and kind of like hipping them to some of this like fun ways that musicians talk about making music and the process of making music, because it's so different than what you see like in a movie.
Yeah.
Unless you're watching a documentary, but like if you're watching an actual like fictional movie, it's, you know, Almost Famous or something like that. The band goes into the studio, man, or that thing you do. The band, this very idealized version of it. To hear like all these process takes, these guys talking about process takes, that's cool. But I definitely feel like I get more out of like a Pat Finnerty for that kind of content, who's an actual musician.
Yeah, don't bring
I do
a comedian
out of,
on to talk
than
about
a comedian
that.
Per se, right?
And they also blew the meaning of the song Peg, but that's okay. They came close, so that's fine. It's actually about a woman who goes into porn or the revenge fantasy about that, but never mind. Donald Trump was elected president. Why do I bring this up? Not to divide us, but rather to talk about the Linda McMahon angle about it. She is the head of Donald, or she is one of the co-chairs of Donald Trump's transition team. And it would not surprise me if Linda McMahon were nominated to be Secretary of Commerce. It would not shock me at all, Chris. And I know everybody's going to be saying, yeah, but what about all these stories about Vince and stuff? And I'm here to tell you, People in wrestling know it. And also, with 53 in the Senate, you'll probably be able to poach off Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. But if she's nominated to be Secretary of Commerce, she's probably going to be Secretary of Commerce. Any deep thoughts on that, or should I continue?
Yeah, I mean, I think the upcoming administration is going to be able to do pretty much whatever they want for about 2 years. So, yeah, if Donald Trump decides that he wants to nominate the nifty guy he met at the bus stop, he'll probably be able to get him through Congress too.
Probably would.
Yeah, I'm fairly convinced that it's not like he'd lose party support, if I'm being completely honest.
But also kind of here for that. Hey, here's this hobo I found. Let's make him Secretary of the Interior.
Yeah, his name is Gerald, and he says that he knows a lot about health and human services. And
he offered me a can of beans. Can I bring it?
Right, yeah. So, you know, I mean, I don't see why Linda McMahon couldn't get in there, given the Gerald the hobo example.
I mean, who's the Exxon guy they had last time? I mean, it can't be much worse.
Rex Tillerson.
Yeah.
No. The one that got me was Zinke, the guy who made his own flag and insisted that they actually fly the flag every time he was in the building. That's a personality.
Stay tuned for Nova and I's special episode of Don't Worry About the Government, which is never coming, ever. Longtime WWE creative members Bruce Pritchard and Michael Hayes are currently on temporary leave, according to multiple sources in the company. This is from Figure Four and also Fightful confirming. Both are expected back, although the time frame was said to be indefinite. Pritchard's absence is officially said to be due to a family emergency. Hayes' absence is due to quote-unquote personal reasons. I welcome them not being involved in the creative process.
Yes.
That's just me.
Their loss is not felt in any meaningful way in terms of content on my TV screen.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe new voices pop up. Who knows? Here's one that got me in trouble on the internet this week, Chris. I was the main character on wrestling Twitter for about an hour and a half. We talked about this last week a little bit. Kenny Omega came back at New Japan Power Struggle. Omega told the crowd at Power Struggle that while he doesn't know when he'll be able to return, he would be able to wrestle, quote-unquote, in a little bit. He also expressed interest in facing one of New Japan's younger talents, saying he would love to wrestle at Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. Omega said that while he is an AEW contracted wrestler, New Japan is still the king of sports, the best pro wrestling in the world, and considers New Japan home. He later cut an angle with Gabriel Kidd. I assume that will be the match, or might be the match on January 4th, and then this Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th, which is going to be like a co-branded pay-per-view with AEW and New Japan and Stardom, is done. Why did Jeff get in trouble for this? Because Jeff said, in what world are you letting Kenny Omega's comeback happen on a show that's not under your brand? And the people who got into my things call me a moron and an idiot, and because New Japan's their partner, and because Kenny loves Japan, and because it really doesn't matter, it doesn't draw focus from AEW, et cetera, et cetera, came into my mentions, and I'm here to tell you, you all are idiots.
Yeah, I think broadly,
Joe Lanza and I had an argument on the Voices of Wrestling Discord about this. It's television more than wrestling for me. It's an event you can build up. You wrote off. I'm going to allow you to collect your thoughts while I rant here a little bit, Chris. You have very few special attractions in AEW. You wrote off Kenny Omega with a career-threatening injury. Build up his return and soak that for ratings for his first appearance. I get that not many people are watching the New Japan show and the sickos are doing it, but he's yours. Even if he wants to make his first comeback at a New Japan show, you say no, because it's better for business for you, because you're paying his salary. And this art camp crap that they're doing, I don't get this move at all. Brian Alvarez echoed the same sentiments on his show and got jumped down his throat. I don't get it, Chris. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a recurring point of exhaustion for me, not just talking about wrestling, but talking about the other aforementioned subjects, has been being told X, Y, Z doesn't matter when there's clear numerical and or case data to suggest that there's an obvious case that X, Y, or Z matters. It matters when you have a star like Kenny Omega, who is one of the biggest stars in your company, coming back after an extended absence on a completely different brand's show, when his return, in light of this bizarre and goofy angle where the Young Bucks are coming to save AEW from the marauding Blackpool Combat Club, would so obviously be aided by Kenny Omega showing up and de-grinchifying the Young Bucks, growing their hearts three sizes that day with a stirring speech. I mean, it's dumb. I don't want to see the Bucks turn face and save the day, but Kenny Omega so obviously would be the deus ex machina to prompt all of this. All of their other friends have gone weird, whether it's Jack Perry or whether it's Hangman Adam Page or whatever, and the Bucks need to see the light, and here comes their longtime friend Kenny Omega, blah, blah, blah. And instead, they're just leaving this money on the table, and you can say that doesn't matter. Well, at a certain point, little mistakes like that start to add up, and that adds up to a loss in numbers. You know, again, it's attritional. The AEW has lost numbers over time. In the other arena, it's like the election turnout's down like 15-20% for the Democratic Party. Like, there's numbers that back all this stuff up, right?
There's data.
And I guess what I'm saying now is I no longer feel burdened to robustly make these arguments, as I very much feel it is in the sickos, the contrarians' ball, like, court, to somehow explain to me how none of the numbers matter, and also that I'm going to see things turn around, and here are the numbers where I'm going to see things turn around, and here's a time and a date that you can kind of, blah, blah, blah. And they don't have that. They just don't, because it doesn't exist.
I get that, and it's a good macro argument. What they'll come back with is one of two things I've noticed. One's actually, people are actually writing stories in their head that Omega, well, maybe Omega's with the Death Riders in some way with Moxley. I'm here to tell you no. I think Chris's call is right, that the Bucks, even though I think they get slaughtered first, and Omega are going to come in to at least stand up to the Death Riders, and good on AEW for putting over this name Death Riders, because Blackpool Combat Club no longer a thing. It's in the past. But the other story you're gonna get is, well, they just got their big TV deal, they got their money. Okay. That doesn't mean you give up trying to actually
Are we making an art argument, or are we making a business argument?
Yes.
Is this an art argument where we only do art when the contract is up? And if so, is that not just a business argument then?
Well, I was going to save this for the Lazy River, but I had a comment that shook me to the core, because he was exactly correct on my show last night. A few years ago, I had a banger of a tweet.
I love looking back on my life at the tweets that I put out.
I was thinking
the ones
about
that really touched the hearts of my followers.
Shut up! Just shut up and let me finish.
No, I look back on some of those good ones.
Well, you know, me and Drill, we're simpatico. Yeah. No, but it was at a time when SmackDown was a better show than Raw, and I said that SmackDown's a good professional wrestling show, and Raw is a television show about a wrestling show, when it was doing a lot of the backstage politics and doing things like that, and it wasn't really very good in-ring, but it was a lot heavy on backstage angles and stuff. Chris, AEW is televised wrestling, and that's it. In other words, put up a ring, put up a camera, have guys come in, wrestle. Boom. That's it. And I went, he's right. The angles are minimal on AEW television. They're like transition pieces to the next match.
You know, the worst part, though, is that of the minimal angles that they've settled in on, the one that they seem to really like over the last 2 years is existential. It's existential crisis, but done in the most minimal way possible. This company is facing existential demise, but like just sketched out in black and white real quickly on a napkin with a pencil.
Yeah, it does feel kind of surface level in terms of story. These two want to wrestle each other to see who's the best, as they tell me. Yeah, well, great. That's the point of all professional wrestling. Let's get into why these two don't like each other. Let's get into, you know,
Roddy Strong really want to wrestle MJF? Why am I supposed to believe that?
Because he doesn't like him. And they were, and they became demons in order to. Oh, it's that old Norm MacDonald bit. Oh, I sold my soul to the devil and I chopped up my parents.
Oh, the hoary underworld.
Yeah, put my parents in a duffel bag and here they are. Hey, it's me, Bob. Oh, Adam Cole. Yeah, I get that, but it was just like, it was such a good comment from a guy by the name of John from Memphis, and I just went, yeah, that's it. He nailed it. Speaking of which, your numbers for last night's head-to-head NXT in Philadelphia doing an ECW tribute show, 619,000.17 on a night that isn't theirs. AEW, 523,000.16 on their normal night.
I mean, the formula clearly works. What can you say?
Yeah, I'm.
How can you argue against the numbers?
And there was no major ECW draw other than Bully Ray. I mean, no offense, I don't think Bully Ray is much of a draw unless. Although I swear to God, when I went to that first WrestleMania in Dallas. There's a dude with his kids. It's like the kids wanted to see the New Day, and the dad was just there to see the Dudley brothers put somebody through a table. That's all they wanted to see. So maybe I'm underestimating it.
No, yeah, I think the staying power of the Dudley boys as a gimmick is sort of underappreciated. People just really liked the... through the table. Well, I don't know. Like, it's like comfort food at this point. It's nostalgic wrestling comfort food.
We're going to talk a little bit about ECW nostalgia in the Lazy River because it's outlasted its welcome for me, but I don't know about you. But a couple of
I don't know, but I think Rob Van Dam looked incredible last night, Jeff. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he was only on AEW a couple months ago, though. I mean, it's not like we can miss him at any point.
It feels like it's been eons.
Yeah. Yoshiki Inamura from Noah appearing on NXT social media. Shawn Michaels greeting him. Well-traveled international talent who spent time in progress in WXW this year. He's there to gain some experience. And then, hey, guess what? WWE signed another Samoan. Lance Inouye, former MLW star and son of Samu, coming into the company. So we got three or four other Samoans we have yet to go into, and I think we're only in the fourth inning, Chris.
Oh my God.
We need an entire Samoan show, like roster split.
I'm going to go further. We don't, because they have not actually thought about what the characterization is for most of the members of this family, or like it comes in extraordinarily slow drips and drabs. Jimmy and Jay just now are starting to have fully defined personalities. Roman, it took a long time to get there. And then the second generation of the bloodline here, these guys feel like, you know, like they're doing a costume, like they're playing the role of various characters.
They're trying to be Sopranos, but Samoan.
Right, but like they need characters, man.
They're not fully fledged. And now we're probably... We may have like just a third bloodline, like let's have like old guys, new old guys, and new guys, and just confuse everybody. And Sammy in here, who has a nice character.
Right.
Let's go into the Lazy River then of wrestling criticism. Whatever we watch, whatever we had time for. Yeah, you know, Sammy has an interesting character to him. I mean, they've put a new shine of paint on him. See if he shows up on SmackDown tomorrow. But I liked this segment with the four Bloodline members. I thought it was pretty decent. I mean,
I'm glad you stayed right here, because yeah, my thought on Sammy is sort of like Sammy is really key for characterization for all of these guys.
Yes.
Like the big breakthrough for Roman, the big breakthrough for Jimmy and Jay, all of them really found more concrete characters through Sami Zayn. And I think it's good to have Sammy back in the mix as part of this story. I think that WWE's gotten much more good at telling stories where good people do complicated things, you know, and like that bad people are not so straight ahead, mustache twisty bad either. Like there's a lot more nuance in WWE wrestling in the stories that they tell too. And I like it.
I'll let you go.
I will pick up with Bronson Reed. Continue to enjoy Bronson Reed, man. Like I think this guy is just a delight. He's good at everything.
Did you see him at Crown Jewel?
I did not see him at Crown Jewel.
Okay, number one, fantastic gear. Tribute to MF Doom. it's pretty sweet. Yeah. I just love the fact that he's kind of like one of those wrestlers of old where it's like you beat him, but he's come back and he's still tough, so it doesn't matter that you beat him. He's still here for the fight. It's so odd because to me that's a guy that Vince, you know, gives him like a chicken leg to walk around with. Oh, you're fat. Go be
right.
Fat guy,
rather than like making this guy the next Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah, it's one of those. Yeah, one of those types of things. I'm going to jump over to AEW real quick. We can go back and forth because that's what we do here. But the Hurt Syndicate promo. I love MVP. I do. And I love this group. I love a Black Excellence group. I love wrestlers who tell me that they're making lots of money doing professional wrestling. It helps me get into the world. It really does. What drives me nuts, though, is this late stage thing where we have to get our flowers, but we're also heels. And this has really been a phenomenon since, I mean, the Horsemen kind of did it a little bit, but they always just kind of said, those guys know what's going on, and they went into their heeldom. This is really a Scott Hall, Kevin Nash type of move, or they get blamed for it a lot. I think they get unfairly blamed for the majority of it, but MVP is basically cutting off Tony so he can hear an MVP chant. He's talking up Shelton Benjamin's bona fides, but he doesn't give like the heel move to stop them from cheering Shelton Benjamin. He does kind of the same thing with Lashley. And it's like, I kind of want them to not put a foot in each world of babyface and heel. I get Shades of Gray. Don't come at me with that. But if you're getting cheers from a crowd when you're calling out Swerve Strickland, I tend to think you're doing it wrong. Just in a bit. It's just a style thing. It's like, yes, everybody's happy to see you, but you need to get that crowd to boo you. And the only way they're getting them to boo them is the appearance of Swerve Strickland as opposed to what they're saying on the microphone.
Right. I mean, that's my problem with this. I like this group in substance, but everyone's thrilled to see these guys reunited. It's reunited and it feels so good. And so then I almost sort of beg the question, especially given that Moxley and the Death Riders are doing this dominant heel faction right now, why not have MVP and the Hurt Business, the Hurt Syndicate, come in kind of as baby faces? Like, why are we even, you know, locked in with Swerve right now? Well, it seems to me like the hotter angle here would be MVP sees Moxley and these guys and goes, no, you guys are actually the problem with the business. What we, you know, what the business needs is prestige and prize fighters, blah, blah, blah. And putting themselves up against the Hurt Business.
Well, they also have a babyface problem in this company too, because it's like everybody gets so cooled off as a babyface, they turn them heel to make them interesting. And now you don't have, I mean, you have Orange Cassidy and you have Darby and you have the conglomeration.
And I think they would have turned Orange Cassidy heel by now if they knew how to.
They teased it quite a bit, so it's one
right.
Of those,
no, if they knew how to actually do a full heel turn with Orange Cassidy and like a full Orange Cassidy heel match, I think you know that they would have already done it by now.
Your turn, sir.
Man, so I guess staying with AEW here, I thought the transition between like the stuff involving the Death Riders and the conglomeration coming out and everything was very ham-handed and poorly done. Like when Mark Briscoe and Kyle O'Reilly and all those guys come out, you expect them to actually engage with the Death Riders, and they don't. They just let them run off. This is a group of people who last week were all standing out behind the building with chains and a laughing John Silver to savagely beat the shit out of the Death Riders when they showed up.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it back also to the Hurt Syndicate. There's a problem in that both the Hurt Syndicate and the Death Riders are both there to show the young guys, to help the young guys, kind of a thing. But the Hurt Syndicate is kind of, what they're doing is that kind of meta thing where they're saying they're there to help the young guys, but they're there for themselves because they're trying to get that WWE heat. Like, hey, we were in there and we're just coming in for a paycheck right now. And we want the young guys to, and they're doing far too subtle a job of trying to tell that story, which I think is kind of lame, to be honest with you. Just be straight ahead heels in the company, as opposed to telling the story of how WWE didn't want us, and now we're here to poach the billionaires' free money from the big TV deal and make everybody else look bad in your little work rate federation, because we're sports entertainers, you know, that kind of a thing. I felt that segment was very WWE-like. Like, you know those times where WWE just decides to do, like, a Richard Linklater slacker type of thing where it's like one segment begins and one segment ends and they're crossing each other on the ramp and they look at each other but they're not really engaging.
And sometimes that's cool with the WWE's been doing that a lot more over the last couple of years, and sometimes that's cool, right?
Sometimes, not a lot,
I mean, I think sometimes it works. I think sometimes it does some nice stuff for world building. I think they do it about three times as often as they need to do it. One of those an episode would be plenty, and they've definitely fallen in love with the premise a little too much. But I think this, it's not remembering, oh yeah, we've now narratively established just last week that the Death Riders are so reviled by the locker room that they all want to beat these guys up. That should be part of Moxley's MO and the way the Death Riders move around now. They have to hide that they enter the building, but they enter the building hiding, not just to keep people on edge, but also because they know that everyone wants to kick their ass. And instead, we got to that point last week, and what? Did Tony Khan come out and say, guys, let's all be nice? Did the Young Bucks come out and say, guys, let's be pleasant here? No, there's no cause for why the locker room all of a sudden this week wouldn't want to still beat the shit out of them.
I'll head over to Raw for a few quick hits, because it was a taped show. I knew what the results were before it was, but I still watched some of it. Man, Gable and Dragon Lee was really good.
Wasn't it? That was a delightful match.
I am just mad as hell that they're turning Chad Gable into Kurt Angle 2.0. Where it's like they had that R-Truth segment. I don't know if that was just for social media or YouTube or not, but I watched that one. And it's like, you're not R-Truth, you're R-Lies. Ha ha ha. It's like, oh God, what are they doing to my boy? But yeah, no, that was just one of those solid matches that just felt like it didn't belong there. And I have no idea what they're doing with Dragon Lee anymore. He's it was one of those things where it's like he's so full of promise.
Yeah, that felt like a crazy work rate match. The other thing I really liked on this show was the wraparound joke of three fine competitors for the world championship and also Dominic.
And also Dominic. Sometimes just doing a running joke like that.
Gunther killed it. Gunther really drove it in the middle of this humbled, reflective, introspective, no, Kaiser. Let's not be like this. There are three great players in there, or three great fighters in there. And also
Dominic.
like even in his most humbled moment, he's never going to extend some sort of grace to Dominic Mysterio. I love it.
Just in canon, the fact that Dominic Mysterio is greasy, skeevy, not a good wrestler, womanizer.
Held in no regard by any of his peers, even his fellow heels. Like, everyone thinks he's a sleazeball.
Yes, he's my favorite Dennis Condrey knockoff.
But I think that then translates to his in front of the curtain heat.
Yes.
The crowd cues off of the fact that even the baby faces hate this guy, and that there's a consistent emotional reaction to this guy in the television presentation.
Yeah. I liked the EO. I mean, look, it was a battle royal and it's stupid to do a match on the apron. There's a lot of things WWE does I don't like. I mean,
you said that, but I'm watching a fighting game where they're basically doing it in 2D right now. People love this stuff.
I get it, but like, I have some rules. I don't want tournaments for contenders. I want tournaments only for titles. I don't like battle royals for contenders. I'd much rather have like an invisible committee tell me who the next number one contender is and things like that. But Io and Lyra Valkyria, they work well together.
They do.
I've never been the biggest Lyra fan, but boy, those two can make music together. It's really...
I think Lyra's really solid. Yeah,
she's gotten better. She's gotten a hell of a lot better, and I think a lot of that is due to iron sharpening iron, and especially like the Becky stuff when she did that feud too. I mean, she's really coming around. And finally, just for Raw, I liked the Curtis Axel callback. I know. I hate the Wyatt Six, but. Actually having a motivation that it was because Miz promised Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel he'd make them stars for years earlier, and now that he has his stupid Uncle Howdy thing driving him, and he's going for revenge for a stupid angle that happened long ago, that, my friends, is long-term storytelling.
What would be even better is a cameo by Curtis Axel.
I want that. Yes.
Now retired, and Bo Dallas comes in, not as Howdy, but as Bo Dallas, and comes in and is like, I finally righted the wrong, Curtis. And like Axel's like, I don't care. I live at home now.
Or he goes into Curtis Axel's employment, and he goes, hey, I righted that wrong. I can't take a break right now. I'm with a customer. I just can't.
Bo, like I can't. No, it's cool. I let that go like years ago, man. Like,
yeah,
they didn't want me. I moved on.
They attacked me during a Royal Rumble and I was never eliminated. So I still think I'm the number one contender for WrestleMania.
Even better. He's like, don't worry. I'm coming back.
We get training montages. We get Rybacksel.
I've got them right where I want them after all these years.
I finally hold all the cards. And he
turns the table. He turns the scene
and he comes
on
in
Bo.
And he just gets murder death by like the Miz.
Bo ends up shimmying out of the room, scurrying back like freaked out by Axel at the end of it.
Or Axel just becomes like a hedgehog or something.
All right, so kicking it over, I guess, next to NXT CW.
Yes,
over here. It was just a perfectly cromulent appearance show in a lot of ways. I think, like, okay, Lola Vice and Jada Parker, this isn't doing anything for either one of these two. And in particular, I thought this finish, just who did this make look strong? You know, we hit Lola in the head with a brick.
With
and
a
then
brick!
She, yeah, and she kicked, and that's not the finish of it. I mean, either you hit her with a brick and she passes out, but she passes out with such a solid vice grip. You know, her name is Vice, that, you know, with a vice grip such that, you know, like Jada Parker can't escape even after she's knocked out Lola. Thus, you know, no, like that'd be a fucking, that'd be a darn cool finish to the match here. Right. Or conversely, you need to have Jada Parker have a killer move and not just an ass blaster off the ropes.
Yeah. The thing, before we move on, I need to talk, because this was where I was starting to watch and listen to Booker T and come up with that bit. And it's just one of those things where it's like he'll start out like an excited 12 or 13 year old. Where he's like, yeah, I'm gonna put some hot sauce on that, you know, trying to be funny. And then he has to go in like serious wrestler commentator mode where he's like, yeah, you can't do that during that move. You have to, you know, do an analysis. And then there'll be a moment where like real Booker T comes through, and this was when like Jada Parker was climbing that ladder to go up on the other, and she goes, is she really gonna do that? And then he realizes he's broken character for a moment, so he has to become an 8-year-old, so he just starts to drop zone, drop zone, drop zone. And I'm just like, how is Vic not getting hazard pay for working with this absolute crazy person next to him at times?
No, I have nothing but admiration for Vic Joseph's ability to get through the show, actively having to manage his colleague, knowing that pretty much at all times they're a liability and cannot be left to their own devices for any length of time. That even entire sentences are sometimes risky with this man.
But Chris, you have now gained a fan for NXT's newest television show, Secret Heel, Kalani Jordan. And in this week's episode, she sets up Rob Van Dam to get attacked by Wesley. I am now convinced that she is secretly manipulating all these people to get beat up and whatnot.
You know, right? Like there is something weird. Like, I'm like only half convinced, dude, obviously, but like there's something delightful about the idea that she comes in and does these pep talks and basically leads everyone on Pickett's charges into the enemy. We just have to believe in the power of friendship and
guys,
fight with our hearts.
Guys, we need to bond together right now.
Go get it. You go Let's get go it. To, you got, yeah.
Go, go, go. Now, where can I steal this pin? Wait a second. Like, I was looking. I don't know if I wanted to go back and rewatch it, but when they pinned when they got the pin, I was looking for Kehlani in the background to see if she was like sneering or something. Like, damn it, that should have been my pin.
I mean, that would be interesting. And like she's in an interesting place. I don't think they're doing anything that interesting with it, but I will continue to enjoy Kalani Jordan's secret heel.
Let's not move on from this, because it's like they're talking about, they're doing the rah-rah session with Jordan and everybody, and all she can talk about is, that's what I learned at Michigan State. Oh, yes. Oh, you're pulling the education card on the rest of us, are you there, bougie?
No, and also the idea that you, like a year and a half older than the rest of us, decide that you need, or maybe even younger than some of us, need to stand up and tell us a pep talk. Like, this is the type of pep talk you give as you're like 42, where you're like, all right, so back in college, blah, you know, blah, and it's something with like 20 years retrospective on it.
No, it's
and
not.
That's
it's over,
what I learned.
It's over-eager student body president Kehlani Jordan, where it's like, as the only person in this room with a BA, no, I feel I should be leading this group.
No, or actually this past summer, guys, I actually went to a group therapy course, and I think I could really lead this session if you guys don't mind.
No, I took a leadership course.
I took a leadership course. I think
think tank, and I just
if I can be completely honest, guys, I do think I know a thing or two about this due to the leadership course I attended. It was a 6-week seminar that I went to every other weekend. It was so good. Are you familiar with Tony Robbins?
What's the name of that small conservative university in Illinois? I can't think of it.
Liberty
right now.
University?
No, no, no. Liberty's in Virginia. That's a Christian one. I'm saying this is more like not social conservative, but just conservative conservative. I was trying to think of it. Hillsdale. I went to Hillsdale College
for a leadership
ceremony this summer. Victor Davis Hanson was there, and we learned about the history of the Third Punic War or whatever, and I just had to use those strategies.
Hillsdale College is the Hampshire College of the Rights.
Your turn, sir. Even though I've been enjoying this.
You like that.
I did. This works. I'm here for it.
All right. Wesley and Javon Evans. This pairing is a terrible pairing for Javon Evans. I continue to have no idea what the hell we're doing with this guy, but putting him in the ring with guys who do basically the same thing that he does but better than him with more polish is not getting him anywhere. I don't know why we think this is a good idea.
So we wind him by having a very athletic match, and then we put him in a ring that's bigger than the one that Rob Van Dam had to use in ECW and hope that he can jump 3/4 of the way across for a frog splash, which I'm sure he can fresh, but after doing a match like that, he lands on his feet and then does, you know, just kind of falls down as a thing, gets his arms raised, kind of like, yeah, great job, kid, by RVD. This didn't do anything for him.
No, I know, and I continue to look at this as a combination of column A and column B, where some of this is just simply he doesn't have a complete enough grasp of the whole picture right now. He has a lot of raw athletic talent, but does not have a complete enough grasp of what makes a good wrestling match, what makes a good wrestler yet. And then the other part of it is the company just continues to massively overexpose this guy.
Yes.
And put him in situations where he can fail multiple times in an outing. And I don't understand what good it does him or anybody to see this guy fail on TV over and again, other than the idea that he's going to just get in his own head. That, you know, I'm sloppy. My techniques look bad. That RKO of me looks like crap. You know, any number of these things. This is not good for this kid.
It's not that I didn't like the ECW nostalgia. Like, it was nice to see Dawn Marie. It was nice, you know.
I thought Dawn Marie was actually a welcome presence. I mean, she didn't do a ton, but
She's not one of those retreads that comes back every single time for a show. I liked Robert Stone is such a great flake. And look, the Rhino thing was fine, but Rhino's been around for a while. The Bully Ray, I actually really liked Bully Ray's reaction to Devon coming out with the tables like it was Christmas morning. I thought that was nice for it. But that said, the Dudley Boys debuted in, what, 95, 96? ECW nostalgia is 30 years old, and when ECW was at its peak, it wasn't that nostalgic. It wanted to kill, you know, the you know what came before it for the most part. It wanted to get rid of the legacy of Ric Flair.
It wanted to kill gimmicks from 2 years ago.
Yeah, it mocked WWE, and it just seems weird that the spirit of ECW. Is, you know, I mean, thank God Tommy Dreamer wasn't available, but, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, we always have to, like, genuflect to the altar of ECW because Paul Heyman still has a bit of a chip on his shoulder, to be honest with you, about how it all went down. But at the same time, it's like even Heyman would go, I would think, you know, why are we being this nostalgic about it, besides, you know, giving me an ego boost, which is fine, and giving the guys a payday, but it's like one of those things where
I love seeing Nunzio get a payday, but I don't need to see Nunzio have a match.
No, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like even the nostalgia isn't my nostalgia anymore. And somebody said that during like the 15th or so NWO reunion on Raw, and it, oh, Bruce Mitchell said it, and I took it to heart, because I'm just like, yeah, like, if you were 15 in 1995, you are now 44, 45 years old. We've had four or five generations of wrestling since. I mean, like, ROH is a nostalgia, is a nostalgia
right.
gimmick in AEW.
My Shinsuke Nakamura shirt that you see me wear on here now went from being a cool, like, when we first started doing this, a cool shirt to being a retro shirt now. I bought that in, you know, 2013, 2014. I don't wear it all the time, so it's still around. It's a 10-year-old, 11-year-old shirt. It's now nostalgia. New Japan, high-era New Japan with the G1s that really kicked ass. That's nostalgic.
Wrestling's become decadent, is what it's become. It's become kind of lazy. Hello, cat.
Yeah, this is Oliver's cat, Milton. This is his first appearance on the television.
What Milton is it named after? Like,
I don't know. I like to think Milton Bradley. I'll ask Oliver here when he comes back in.
I was thinking like the author Milton, like John Milton, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Or Milton from the Bill What's His Face cartoons.
I'll ask him here. Yeah.
I'll go back to AEW real quick. This Adam Cole thing doing nothing for me again.
Nope, nothing.
It feels fairly it's weird that they booked the third match of Adam Cole versus Takeshita, but that also feels like it's going to be a DQ with the Callis family jumping Adam Cole. And then the Kingdom maybe deciding not to help so quickly or something. I don't know, to bring up the Roddy stuff. The MJF, you know, making phone calls on film while everything else is kind of live to tape. It's a bit jarring stylistically in a way. But it's so, like, Aleister Black basically just kind of quitting. You're just like, what? The House of Black having one foot in the babyface and heel to build up Adam Cole, who they're questioning his ankle. None of this is working for me. I'm sorry.
No, none of the AEW universe works for me. Like, how does the House of Black feel about what the Death Riders are doing?
We don't know. Yeah.
We have no, right. I have no idea.
And it seems to be a world connecting event. Where the Death Riders are going around trying to beat. They basically have put
The entire locker room was out in the parking lot. So, again, it should be a complete and total reaction to this. No, WCW's NWO angle was not everything. But, man, the one thing they definitely did very consistently is they made you feel like the NWO was perceived as a threat to everyone in the locker room.
Same with the Nexus invasion too, for the few weeks that they did that. Okay, it's like those guys were going around beating up main eventers and stuff in addition to just guys like in the mid card and in below. This is a comic book crossover where the only people we've seen, they're holding out the Justice League because they're two big stars for this, and instead we're getting like Infinity Incorporated and the Reserve Teen Titans of sorts, and nobody cares about those guys for the most part.
No, I know. No one cares about the fate of any of the guys currently in the ring other than Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy.
Right.
You know, if like they beat or the Death Riders decided that they want to, you know,
Dark Order.
Right. They could have Evil Uno in the absolute cruelest possible scenario, tying him up by all four limbs and threatening to quarter him and make it really obvious. And the audience would not care enough. Like, that wouldn't really get heat.
Both these guys are going to chant for it. Two quick things. One, a match thing and a question concerning this Death Riders gimmick. The one thing, Collision, Thunder Rosa, your girl, versus Harley Cameron. In a hardcore match. That thing was friggin' awesome. I loved it. Harley Cameron is such a fantastic stooge. And it really tells you how they've basically squandered all that star power that Thunder Rosa had when she was on Dynamite by jettisoning her off to Saturdays where nobody's going to watch. But my question about the Death Riders is Shayna, not Shayna, Marina Shafir, is she a MacGuffin? Because nobody's ever explained what she's doing. They're not attacking women. Nobody's asked Renee Paquette, how do you feel about your husband hanging around?
I know. She's like China, but like invisible to some people. I like the idea more that most of the other wrestlers can't actually see Marina Shafir.
Invisible Marina Shafir. She's what's the name of the she's Harvey. She's the giant rabbit. She's the giant six-foot rabbit nobody else can see.
We see her.
Yes.
We see what she's
maybe she's not actually. Who kicked Bryce Remsburg? I have.
Remsburg's looking around.
I need Excalibur to say, appears he got kicked in the head there and knocked out of the ring.
How is Moxley able to do this? Shivani and Excalibur. I just don't understand it. I can't make heads or tails of it. How it's like someone's pulling his hair right now.
Do you have anything else, or should we go to Vader Club?
Let's go to Vader Club.
All right. So at the last minute, you selected Vader versus Salman Hasanmikov from, I think that's how you say it, from New Japan, 1989. Explain yourself, sir.
I just wanted to do one that I hadn't done before. I saw Vader had a bout, or like, you know, had several matches with a bunch of Russians, and I was like, I want to watch Vader fight a bunch of Russians. these are good Sinister Sickle and Hammer Russians, just like we got these days. Let's go. I just picked it out. I looked at this guy. He seemed big and burly, and
he's burly.
He is big and burly, and I like. The visual pairing of these two guys was good, and there are definitely points in this match where there's some good stiff hitting.
Because these guys don't know how to work yet. And
oh, dude, Vader has a
shoot.
I know Vader's just clobbering with those over hit. I mean, the blows he's doing are like basically like 90 degrees down on the shoulder type of blows.
Well, the first one in the gut, I think, tagged him pretty good, and you can see him just look at the guy for a moment. Like, I thought this look because the Russian is a legit amateur wrestler who is coming to the pros because New Japan had a run on, you know, old guys who weren't going to make it to the next Olympiad. Let's put it that way. He would have probably wrestled in 84 for the Olympics, but you know, this is 88, 89. You know, he's a little bit past his prime, he's in his late 30s.
Oh, and also weight classed up, probably.
Yeah, I mean, and
wrestling's very weight class dependent.
Not doing his training all that much. I just love that he doesn't kick out at the three, and then he gets the pin on Vader with like a two count. That was
so funny. I was just like, this is a true Russian finish. They rig it. I hit it.
Yeah, and he was down for a good four count before somebody told him, hey, yes, you have to kick out.
Yes. Oh, no, Vader won this match. That's I love this finish because, no. Vader loses this match, but by any reasonable estimation, he won this match.
And they have seconds because, like, the whole Russian team is out there. I think Zangief is in this crew and stuff like that, and I think maybe Brad Riggins. Don't quote me on that one, but Steve Dr. Death Williams is just randomly out there yelling for Vader. this was interesting.
It has its moments. I think when we get the wrestler doing big wrestling style slams on Vader, those look really good.
Yes, very much so. Like the suplexes and stuff. Those are legit.
That crossover into the arm breaker looked awesome. That little combo looked really, really lovely. There's some really nice spots in this match. I wouldn't urge anyone to go out of their way necessarily to grab this, but like, yeah, you know, if you're looking for something a little off the beaten path, this is kind of a fun one. Obviously that finish was a hoot.
Yeah, now read this. His reign was short-lived as he lost the championship in his first defense only 48 days later to Ricky Choshu. Hashimikov.
Put it back on the safe hand, huh?
Or Hashimikov, however you say it, was the first actual Russian-born wrestler to win a professional wrestling title in the capitalist countries before the Cold War ended. Because those gimmicks were usually Americans playing Russians, see Nikita Koloff, etc., or they were just used for their heel stuff, much like Nikolai Volkov, although, yeah, Lithuanian counted as Russian back then. So, yeah, that was interesting. I'll think of something for next week. I'll get it on the Twitter as soon as I think about it. It'll be over the weekend, but let's cut it off there. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at ShakeThemRopes, all one word. You can follow Chris on the gram at DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, whether you like it or not. Podcast for all of your wrestling fandoms.
Or even whether you know it or not is like what I like to say. It's whether you know it or not, we've actually been here this whole time.
Yeah, subscribe to the super feed. Subscribe to the Discord. Come talk to me. I'm lonely in that channel. Nov occasionally pops in when somebody makes a smart remark about him or something like that, but he's generally not in there because he generally doesn't like social media, and I'm starting to agree with him after my week on Facebook, which I'll talk to him after later. But he has some plugs for you right now.
Yeah, if you're looking for guitar lessons, hit me up on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. Please go and subscribe to my Spotify. Would love people to listen a little bit more to the old Spotify over there. Going to get back to doing that. Subscribe to my band, The Asteroids, on Instagram. And, I don't know, keep on living. Whatever.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen. If you haven't already, we are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.